The BBC presents My Word. And here to introduce the programme and the panel is Jack Longland.
My Word is a word game played by people whose business is words, and those taking part are Dillis Powell, Anne Scott James, Frank Muir, and Dennis Norton. Here's round one. Try and test their vocabulary. Two marks if they get the meanings right. Dillis Powell, what is a mangrove or mangrove?
It's got a tree with a lot of very sort of tangled roots.
Yes, and where would you expect to find it? Generally.
Indian Ocean.
Yes, that'll do.
Australia. One will be.
Tropical tree or shrub. They use the bark for medicine or in tanning. It grows in the mud on the seashore and has the most extraordinarily twisted roots. Two marks. Dennis Norton, what is a stylite? S-T-Y-L-I-T-E, a stylite.
It's for pigs who like to read in bed. Is this Saint Simeon?
Yes, that's the chap.
Well, he was, with all due respect, up the pole.
Yes.
He squatted on top of a pole or column?
Column, that's it. He was a medieval ascetic who lived on top of a pillar, and there were plenty of pillars about because lots of the temples had been knocked down, and St. Simeon's Stylites was one of them, and Peter Amitra was another, a very sort of rigorous kind of life. Anne Scott James, what is or was a rock? R-O-C.
No care. Oh, it's that enormous and terrifying bird that you meet in the Arabian Nights.
Yes.
It used to descend on people and swoop off with them.
Yes.
Carry them to its mountain, eyrie, nest.
Yes, absolutely right. Yes. Gigantic bird in Eastern legends and tales. Sinbad, I think, suffered from it on one occasion.
Oh, yes.
Two marks. Hank Miller, what are persiennes? P-E-R-S-I-E-N-N-E-S. Persiennes, or persiennes, if you like.
Persiennes. Well, some of the words we get on this program are known, and some are unknown. I think these are persiennes unknown.
I think
shutters.
What?
Dillis says shutters.
Yes. Any particular kind of shutter?
Well, French ones.
Well, not quite.
French ones are called jalousie.
Yes,
there's a song
that will help a lot.
Jalousie, twas all over. Jalousie. Jalousie are Venetian blinds which come down and do that.
And would you wear them inside or outside your window?
Outside, sir.
All right, I'll give you two marks.
50-50.
This is the difference between persiennes, which came from Persia originally, which are horizontal laths fastened into a frame, so you could tilt them, as you do tilt a Venetian blind, to let in the sunlight or to keep it out. But they're worn outside the windows, whereas the Venetian blinds, which are on tapes or cords, are usually inside. Well done. Well, before we begin round two, I give each team a quotation for them to write down. I want the two women members of the team to go on thinking about those quotations. And then at the end of the program, I shall ask them where they come from. Not the women, but the quotations. Well, Dillis Powell and Frank Muir, here's your quotation. She's my sweetheart, I'm her beau. And Anne Scott James and Dennis Norton, here's yours. Actions speak louder than words. And then at the end of the program, I shall ask Frank and Dennis to give me their idea of how these words came to be said or written. Well, round two is all about classical mythology. Two marks if you get the answers reasonably right. Beginning with Dillis Powell, Perseus was a great mythological hero. Who was his father, whose influence helped him rather a lot in his career?
Zeus, they're all.
Yes.
Zeus was everybody's father.
That's all right. Zeus, or Jupiter, was the father of Perseus, and Zeus was very clever and came down in a shower of gold, which upset everybody very much, and the result was Perseus. Dennis Norton, when this chap, Perseus, whom we've just heard about, went off to find the Gorgons and cut off the head of one of them, Medusa, He was lent a very special helmet to wear on this rather difficult enterprise. Where did he get that helmet from, and why was it so special as a helmet?
He was lent the helmet by a very famous Greek called Harry the Helmet Lender. Well, I really don't know, Jack.
The helmet helped him in a particular way, which...
Yes, they all did. They all had these unfair advantages. Yes, they either turned into a shower of gold or swans.
Made him invisible.
Made him invisible. Thank you, Anne. Yes.
One out of two. The helmet, in fact, came from Pluto, and it made Perseus invisible so that he wasn't turned to stone. We go on to Anne Scott James. In ancient mythology, when people died, it was thought that their souls were ferried across a river by a certain boatman to the infernal regions. I'd like to know the name of the river and the name of the boatman.
The river was the Styx and the boatman was Charon.
Charon was the ferryman. There is, in fact, a slight confusion, as there often is in mythology, as to whether it was the Styx or the Acheron.
Yes.
Yes, well done. I'd like to give you a bonus mark there, Anne, but I'm not allowed to do that.
Yes, it's all right, Anne. We won't tell.
All right, we will. Your we'll break all our rules. We'll give Anne 2.5 for knowing Acheron as well as Styx.
And I have one for deportment.
Yeah. One for deportment.
Hence, horse races over the Styx.
Yes, very much so. And then Frank Mir again. Who was the god of shepherds, huntsmen, and countrymen, and later was thought to be the god of the whole universe? And why has his name been immortalized in a word in our language which is used to describe a certain acute type of fear?
Do what? Oh, a word has appeared as if by magic on the writing pad next to mine. It says pan.
Yes. And the fear?
Panic.
Yeah, thank you very much. That's the word I wanted. 2 marks. Well, the next round is origins and derivations. To be marked up to a possible maximum of 3 marks. We begin with Dillis Powell. The place was a shambles. I want its present meaning and its derivation.
The place was a shambles?
Mm.
Well, it means it was a terrible mess and yes. Everything was upside down.
Yes, that's fair. And originally?
Well, a shambles has something to do with a sort of market, butcher's market, isn't it?
Yes, a rather particular part of a butcher's market.
Shambles.
Well, you cut it up.
3 marks it is. Usually means, as Dillis rightly says, think the place is in a frightful mess and upside down. Usually in the past, it referred to bloodthirsty battle scenes where everybody was lying about chopped up in plenty heaps. But it was a butcher's slaughterhouse, and there are streets in a good many towns in England called the Shambles. Dennis Norden. He knows how many beans make 5.
Well, it means he's got common sense.
He yes.
Knows his way around.
Yes, that's all right. And originally?
Well, originally, I presume it came from a time when people couldn't estimate how many beans. That must have been when we first sort of crawled out of the water onto dry lands. We didn't have fingers yet. And somebody used to do a thriving trade selling beans in groups of 3 and making a very good profit. That's five beans. Each out 5 beans. They come along and they've got no fingers to count on.
It's some sort of old English country custom.
Don't
that's
you it.
Think?
Yes. Yes, it's an English right country it. Custom. How
just
many
serve.
Beans make 5? I don't know. Stay there. Wait. I'll put the light out.
And then.
Well. Very old English country custom.
Exactly. And they did it to greensleeves, didn't
that's
they?
That's right. Yeah.
For that
come mucking out time.
Interesting glimpse of prehistory. I'll give you 1.5 marks out of 3, I think. Present meaning, as Dennis says, somebody's no fool's got some common sense, comes from an old joke or riddle, not a very good one, I don't think. The questioner asked how many beans make 5, and when he was given the correct answer, he would then go on to say, but how many blue beans make 5 white ones? And the answer is 5 if you peel them. Now, on to Anne Scott James. The phrase unearned increment.
It simply means unearned money.
Yes, near enough. And originally?
Well, would it be something to do with crops? That if you...
No, it's not
know,
crops. You're getting near.
Oh, it means weeds. It means something that you haven't sown. Is that it? Which
no. I'm going to give you again...
Dear. Not
one mark, I think it would be fair this time. It now means any money that comes to you without your having done a stroke of work for it. And that's all right, Anne got that right. But originally it referred to a particular kind of windfall. If you owned a bit of land and it suddenly increased enormously in value, not because of anything you'd done, but because somebody found coal or oil under it, or because they suddenly had a building development
property
on it.
Developers.
Mm. Yes.
The early
or they
developers.
Wanted to put a railway through it. Mm. That was unearned increment. It suddenly went up in value and you hadn't lifted a finger. I think that one would be fair. Frank Muir, and this may encourage you, I fear, sea shanties.
Sea shanties are... good night, fair lady, all the leavey shy, and so forth and so forth. And hold me bullies in me arties, and lean on the capstan, and drag up the anchor. And there are songs that sailors used to sing. They're work songs of maritime people.
Yes.
And the present meaning, which is a past meaning. And what?
Yes. Why did you sing the song while you were working?
Because it gave you a rhythm.
Yes, that's what I wanted. 3 marks it is. Songs sung by sailors doing a job which involved a number of them trying to work, pull together, with a solo by the shantyman or leader, and then alternating with a chorus. And the idea was that the rhythm of the music helped the capstan to come round smoothly and the anchor to be up to whatever it was. Comes from the French word, obviously, chante, or singing. Well, in the next round, it's about books, and some of the best known and perhaps some of the best loved books in the world are about animals. But do you know who wrote them? For 2 marks, give me the authors of the following animal stories. Beginning with Dilys Powell, Garm, a hostage.
Gum?
No, gum. Animals.
Yes, definitely.
Animals?
Canine Doyle.
Yes. Yes, we've got the right animal. That's all right so far. It's a rather oriental dog, this one.
Oh, oriental dog. Kipling.
Yes, Garm, a hostage. Story by Rudyard Kipling. The drunken soldier left his dog with a narrator and... It was a pathetic and a touching story in which, in the end, he gives the dog back. And
what should we do with the drunken soldier?
Never leave your dog with a narrator.
No. He went on for quite a long time, Dennis. Now, Dennis Norton. Lassie, come home.
Ah. Is it Eric Bentley? No,
Eric.
He writes on drama.
Eric is right.
Eric Knight.
Eric Knight. It is, 2 marks. And Scott James. White Fang.
Oh, Jack London.
Jack London it is, 2 marks. Frank Muir, The Tale of Mrs. Tiggy Winkle.
Great books of the world. Beatrix
Potter, yes. I am informed.
Yes?
Is it?
And what was Mrs. Tiggy Winkle?
It's an animal. Yes. For a duck.
He's a mouser. No, William. Hedgehog, I think.
Yes,
Mrs. Tiggy Winkle was a hedgehog.
The Tale of Mrs. Tiggy Winkle was by Beatrix Potter, and Mrs. Tiggy Winkle was an admirable hedgehog who lived under Cat Bells just the other side of Borrowdale. And the next round is all about nouns of assembly, things like a school of porpoises or a charm of goldfinches or a bench of magistrates and so on. 2 marks if you get them right. Dilys Powell, eggs.
Eggs?
Mm.
A clutch.
Yes, quite right. Dennis Norden, onions.
String.
Well, very nearly. Make it a bit bigger.
Rope.
Right. A rope.
Rope. A rope of onions.
A rope of onions. These nice Bretons and Normans
sellers,
who come round with bicycles and sell them in ropes. And Scott James, trees.
Clump of trees?
Clump, stand, grove would do. Frank Muir, bread.
Bread?
Mm.
A loaf?
No.
Bread. A baking.
Bread.
Baking.
A baking of bread. A shovel of bread.
That sort of thing.
A tin of bread.
No,
an oven of bread.
Yes, what you put in the oven?
Shush.
You're being helped.
Inspiration has suddenly dawned. It's a batch of bread. A batch of bread.
1 out of 2. And that's generous. A batch of bread it is. And now we come to the last round and go back to those quotations I gave the two teams earlier on in the program. Dilys Powell, first of all, for 2 marks. I'd like the origin of your quotation. She's my sweetheart, I'm her beau.
It's a song?
Yeah.
She is my Annie. I'm a Joe.
Sweet Annie something.
She's my sweetheart.
Yes, Sweet Annie something, certainly. I don't know what it is.
Sweet Annie Rooney?
Yes.
Rooney.
Sung by Michael Nolan on all sorts of music halls around about 1890. She's my Annie, I'm her Joe. She's my sweetheart, I'm her beau. Soon we'll marry, never to part. Little Annie Rooney is my sweetheart. Now, Anne Scott James, the origin of your quotation, please. Actions speak louder than words.
It's a tremendously smug sentiment, isn't it?
Yes.
And I think it's by my favourite author, Anon.
I think that's good enough. It's traditional, proverbial, anonymous. It appears in proverbial literature in almost all languages. But now I shall ask Frank and Dennis to give me their explanations of how these quotations came into being. And this time the marks will go to whichever incredible explanation gets the longer amount of applause from the audience here in the theatre. So back to Frank Muir with his quotation, "She's my sweetheart, I'm her beau."
Some great man whose name escapes me at the moment, Socrates or Stan Marshall or it was Benjamin Franklin, said that if you can build a better mousetrap, the world will beat a path to your door. I speak without my books. Give a word or two, that was a quotation. I'd like you to know that I have invented a better mousetrap. It isn't even a trap. It is a humane way to kill mice. If you have mice, listen to me, I know how to cure it. I have studied the mouse as a mouse for a considerable time, since last Thursday. And I've studied it very carefully, and I know how to defeat it. I can beat it at its own game. Now, a mouse sort of nibbles things. Nibble, 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 nibble. Nibble, 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 nibble. When it doesn't eat the whole of the thing, it leaves sort of a row of little tiny sort of dents along the cheese. It is known zoologically as a rodent. Mice are very timid creatures. This is one of the secrets of my successful humane killer of mice. Extremely timid. A sudden clap of thunder. Or if you jerk your elbows together loudly, like that. That is enough to give a mouse a kind of paralytic fit, enough to kill him. Now, knowing these two ingredients, a mouse's feeding habits, and the fact that any sudden shock will destroy him, here is how you destroy your mouse humanely. Cheese, first of all. Cheese can't beat cheese with mice. Cheese to tempt him out of his hole. Now, the other delicacy a mouse loves are the kernels, the germ of wheat. You know, you get a whole lot of wheat and you rub it in your hands and get all the husks off until you're left with the heart of the wheat. You then lay a little trail from the cheese along through the kitchen, through that rotten, drafty passage we've got. And then you go into the drawing room. Then you lie full length on the ground in an angora pullover. It's most essential. And you put little bits of this heart of wheat along your arm, deep in the angora, and you lie flat on the ground and wait. Now, be very quiet, not a breath. Eventually the mouse will come out, eat the cheese. Ha ha, that's the aperitif. Where is the main meal? Your Mr. Mouse will say. Spots the wheat germ, the heart of the wheat. Eats it, goes along, eats a bit more. Goes along, eats a bit more, eventually comes up your arm. He is now in a jungle of angora fur. You see, he can't see you. He comes within 2 inches of your face. And then you go, ha! Like that. Have you ever been in bed with an angora bed jacket? But when you hurl along angora, it parts and makes a little sort of footpath. The mouth will then be staring you face to face, and you say, boo! To the mouse. He is so stunned by this that he gives a little quiver of fright and drops dead. I approve it. It is quite humane. He feels nothing, madam. It's a lovely way to go. So do try it. Just follow my plan. Follow the ingredients and the modus operandi, and that is my infallible humane mouse killer. Just to give you the thing in details, it's cheese, mice, wheat heart, arm, ha, boom!
Well, I'm expecting to hear terrible reports of animal cruelty coming from near Egham in Surrey. We'll go on to Dennis Norden, and if you remember, his quotation was, "Actions speak louder than words."
Well, ever since this program started, it's been introduced as a word game played by people whose business is words. And a lot of you may have thought to yourself, what does he mean, that man? People whose business is words. Well, now, I can reveal to you exactly why we were called that, because at the time, that is what our business was. Our business was words. We were all of us, you might describe us as word sharps, and the greatest of us was Dillis Powell. She was a word sharp. Diamond Dill, they call her. She was the greatest. Take on anybody at anything. But she gave it up that night when suddenly the tension got too much. She was at her usual corner table in Soho. Suddenly this big Rolls came to the door. It was this rich gambler who lived in Knightsbridge. He'd heard about Diamond Dill. He wanted to match himself against her. She was taken to Knightsbridge, and he says, "I hear you're pretty good at word games." "Yeah." Says, "Okay, Scrabble, £5 a letter." She said, "Good enough. Dirty words count double." Right. They played far into the night. He lost £30,000 to her. He said, "All right, let's go on to something a bit more advanced." He said, "Can you play consonants? You ever played the consonant game? Have to get words." I'll explain to you as I go along, actually. You set each other problems in words. He said to her, "Tell me a 15-letter word in which no letter is used more than once. Double or nothing for the 30,000. Moments pause, she said, "Uncopyrightable." "Don't bother to check it, it's right." He paled. He said, "Okay. On to the consonant game proper. Give me a word where two consonants follow one another." She said, "Find." Right, N-D. He said, "Right." Now, the way this game goes is that she then challenges him. She said, "Give me a word where three consonants follow one another." Pause. The room was quiet. You could only hear the breathing. He said, "Raspberry." S-P-B. He could have said dumbfounded, which is the same. His turn to ask her. He said, "Give me a word where four consonants follow one another." Now it was getting tough. This separated the men from the boys now. She said, "Strength." N-G-T-H. He paled. He knew she was good. He never knew she was that good. That was her turn to ask him. Remorselessly, she pressed on. "All right. Five consonants following one another." He thought. No, he failed. And he had to challenge her. She said, "Strengthless." N-G-T-H-L. Well, she'd won the lot. All he'd got. He said, "One last throw. One last throw. I'll give the house as well in Knightsbridge." Six consonants following one another. Now, she hadn't expected this. She'd been up all night, round the coffee bars, playing. She thought she had 30 seconds. If she failed to think of the word in 30 seconds, she'd lost the lot. And suddenly, a fellow standing by, gave her a little tap on the shin. She looked. And he just looked, indicated out the window, and the dawn was breaking. She couldn't see. She couldn't see what he meant. He kicked her again on the shin. Nodded. Look, look. She looked. She could see the rooftops of Knightsbridge. The sun coming up over that tanning factory they got down there. She couldn't see. He kicked her again. He kicked her 8 times before she caught on. 6 consonants following one another. She said it. Knightsbridge. G-H-T-S-B-R. She won the lot. She's never played again. She only plays panel games now. And she's always believed. Now, hacked shins speak louder than words.
Well, by your vote, Dennis Norden wins the contest of stories, and I shall never dare to speak to Dillis again. And that brings us to a final score in which, nevertheless, Dillis Powell and Frank Muir win by 2 marks from Anne Scott James and Dennis Norden. And this also brings to an end this edition of My Word.
In My Word, you heard Dillis Powell, Anne Scott James, Frank Muir, and Dennis Norden, introduced by Jack Longland. The program was devised by Tony Schreien and Edward J. Mason, and presented by the BBC.